Good evening and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL legends live. Join us tonight as we get more legendary stories from former players and coaches who were in the huddles, on the sidelines, and in the locker room. Plus insights from media members from around the country who have covered the game for decades. Check out our five-star picks of the week with former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. Plus, our spotlight on the positive segment. And here are some good things for a change about what players and teams are... And welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL legends live. Join us tonight as we get more legendary stories from former players and coaches who were in the huddles, on the sidelines, and in the locker room. Plus insights from media members from around the country who have covered the game for decades. Check out our five-star picks of the week with former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. Plus, our spotlight on the positive segment. And here are some good things for a change about what players and teams are doing in their communities. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Go get them, guys.
Well, it's conference championship week. We're down to the final four teams. And guess what? Tom Brady, all 43 years, 171 days old of him, has his Bucs team one game away from his 10th Super Bowl appearance. We've already seen Phillip Rivers retire this week. It should probably be the final seasons for Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees as well. All younger, by the way, than Tom Brady. Brady is vying to take the Bucs, a team that finished 5-11 in 2017 and 18 and 7-9 last season, to the Super Bowl for the first time since they won it back in 2002. Remember when we were all wondering whether it was Brady or Belichick? Well, here we go. Good evening, folks, and welcome to Thursday Night Tailgate, where your favorite NFL legends live. Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari here with you. Tonight's going to be great. We have some of our guest Hall of Famers coming back to join us, so we're looking forward to having a lot of fun tonight, and we're certainly glad you are here with us. Bob, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Chris. How about yourself?
I'm great, but I got to ask you, what's the vibe like up there in New England? Are they rooting for Brady to win another Super Bowl? Are they upset with the Patriots for letting it happen somewhere else? Are they mad at Belichick because Brady's gone? How are the people up there feeling?
I think you hit on a few things there. I think there's a combination of things up there. There are a lot of people, Chris, that just don't like that he left New England. They would have loved to see him retire here. And I know he was not ready to retire. He just likes playing football. He surely doesn't need the money. And, there's just a lot of people that, just were rubbed the wrong way. You know, it's going to look, when he goes into the Hall of Fame, all those years with New England and maybe just a few years somewhere else. So they're not happy. And especially, I think what rankles the fans most of all is that he did so well where he went in the New England team just tanked this year. So, yeah, it's kind of a negative feeling up here, but they got other fish to fry, Chris. There's a lot of answers that they have to work in the off season here. And I'm sure we'll get into that with our guests tonight. So a lot of work to be done here to at least get to respectability before Belichick retires.
Yeah, so there's a lot to get into with all of that tonight, and we'll certainly talk about it with Tony Collins a little bit later on in the show. And speaking of the show, who do we have with us tonight? Well, our first guest is going to be Steelers legend Greg Lloyd, and nobody tells it the way it is like Greg does. No sugarcoating things when Greg answers a question. And that's, you know, the passion that he shares and the way he shares his thoughts are one of the things that we love most about him. Bob, I'm anxious certainly to hear Greg's assessment of the Steelers and how poorly they played probably over the last third of the season, if you want to be honest. Plus get his memories of Kevin Green and, you know, those guys bookend the Steelers for a few seasons together, very close knit. So interesting to hear his thoughts when we, since we lost Kevin way, way too young. But Greg's a great friend of the show, and certainly looking forward to having him back with us tonight.
Still brings that intensity to the table well into his 50s now, Chris, which you and I are always amazed at. I watch football on a weekly basis, and I see something kind of crazy happening, and I said, my goodness, what would Greg Lloyd think about that? And I should write all these things down, but we surely always have enough questions to ask him. I just love his intensity, and you talk about an old-style football player. We're going to have one on in a few minutes here.
Exactly right. Looking forward to having Greg join us about 10 minutes from now. Following him, Tony Collins is going to be back to lead us through our five-star picks of the week for the conference championship game. Spoiler alert, folks. One of us went 4-0 last week and got himself back in the race. Hear who that was when Tony joins us, like I say, about 30 minutes from now. Later on in the hour, we're going to get a return visit from SiriusXM radio host Zig Fricassi. Bob, interested to get Zig, first of all, his picks, right, for the conference championship games. But as you know, Zig's from Buffalo, but grew up a Cowboys fan. So it's going to be interesting to see, is he, you know, the hometown roots? Is he jumping on the Bills bandwagon, or who does he like? But looking forward to that, and certainly talking some hockey with Zig as well. Zig's a big hockey nut and fan, and does college hockey this week for SiriusXM as well. Certainly looking forward to having him back on the show, Bob.
He's been a good friend for a long time, Chris, and joined us on both the TV and radio sides, and very kind to us. We love watching his tweets, especially during NFL games. And like you said, you could talk any sport with Zig, so we're always honored to be in his presence.
Absolutely. He'll join us, like I say, near the top of the next hour. Then we'll round out tonight's show with a return visit from the Dean of Atlanta Sports Talk Radio, Bo Bach. A lot to get into with Bo tonight, Bob, you know, about all the Atlanta sports, right? What happened to the Braves last season and their collapse against the Dodgers in the NLCS? Want to get his thoughts, you know, again, why the Georgia Bulldogs can't seem to get over the hump. And then the Falcons, a team that continues to regress year after year after their collapse in the Super Bowl 5 years ago. They got a new head coach and general manager now. So we know Bo is not going to hold back on his thoughts on any of that, Bob.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were just describing some of those things, Bo is one of the more critical people on the city of Atlanta as far as on a sports landscape that you'll ever see. And he'll give you the reasons for it. You know, we think of Atlanta as a great town for sports and anything else, artsy and everything, but Bo will tell you what's going wrong and why it's going wrong and why he's mad about it. So he's a great friend. Love Bo.
Yeah, we both do. Bo will join us a little over an hour from now. So another great show on tap for you tonight, folks. And as we always say, sit back, relax. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours.
It's time for another edition of Bob's Take. So, Bob, tell us, what's on your mind tonight?
All right, let's get into this week's edition of Bob's Take. And, Bob, I want to start by getting your thoughts on Drew Brees. We've talked about Phillip Rivers and how he retired. My opinion is Ben Roethlisberger should follow suit. Your thoughts on Brees after his 134-yard, three-interception day against the Bucs last Sunday. Is it time for him to walk away, too?
I think it's time, Chris. Now, let me preface this by saying Drew Brees is one of my top five favorite players of all time. I mean, Walter Payton's got to be right up there just because of the way these guys approach the game. Brees, you know, how can you start, Chris? I mean, never read anything bad about the man. Undersized. They said he was 6 foot, 200 pounds. That's soaking wet. What he did with his ability, I mean, 80,000 passing yards. I don't have to go into the, if you go to Football Reference and look at the black dots all over the place on his records and the records that he holds and how many times he led the league in certain categories. And, you know, not every one of those Saints teams were that good, Chris. I mean, until Peyton came along, you know, they had some average seasons, man. And, you know, he did spend those seasons in San Diego. But, of course, he'll be always known, and he'll go into the Hall of Fame with a Saints jersey on. But it's time for him, Chris. I mean, first of all, he's just turned 42 the other day. how many guys can do it in their 40s? I mean, Brady's taken that to a different level, but how many guys really can play up to a Super Bowl level into their 40s? He's missed games over the last two seasons. His yardage is down, had the least amount of yardage this year that he did ever, Chris. I mean, and, you know, I know he played a few less games than normal, but other categories, yards per game was his lowest since his rookie days. You know, his touchdown interception rate. I mean, we've talked about his arm strength. He never had a great strong arm, Chris, but it just took a little bit also. So when you combine all that, and you saw a lot of his passes getting knocked down, and that's happened throughout his career, but he can't afford that as much now. And and we'll get more into the Saints game this week, what they did. I mean, he couldn't get Michael Thomas involved. I just think him and the Peyton thing, you know, they won the Super Bowl, Chris. It's time for him. He has nothing left to prove. He's a big family man. And again, one of the probably the smartest man I've ever seen walk on a football field. That's saying something. But I'd like to see him go out having completed 70% of his passes. I mean, he didn't embarrass himself, but he's not going to get any better, Chris. Yes, it's time for him.
Yeah, and I love the video of he and Brady after the game, you know, kind of embracing each other, talking for a little bit, Brady playing catch with Breeze's sons in the end zone and greeting his wife and his daughter. And then as Brady walks away, pointing to one of Breeze's sons and telling him that, you know, not to pick on his sister. Be nice to your sister, I think is what he said. As he walks off, I thought that was a great moment that they shared after the game. But yep, I agree with you, Bob. I think it's time for Breeze to walk away. Next, Bob, I want to get your thoughts. Jim Harbaugh vehemently defended his run-heavy offense this week on the heels of their 17-3 loss against the Bills last Saturday. And as I've been saying all along, you stop Lamar Jackson from running, you stop the Ravens. But they won a lot of games thanks to his legs. Your thoughts, do they need a more balanced offense? Or is this just one bad game?
No, I definitely agree with what you said. I was thinking about what you said the entire game. There are going to be games, Chris, where, I mean, Jackson is a freakish talent. We know that. His speed is incredible. The fact that he's played most of his games with that kind of style, and he's still a very young man, you got to commend the guy. Obviously, he's got an MVP under his belt. But there are going to be times in his career when you come up against a team that can contain him, and then he has to beat you with his arm. And I probably thought that Harbaugh in this game kind of saw that on the wall. I think he probably thought, we got to establish this run game. I don't want Lamar Jackson going out there and throwing 40 passes if we don't have to. But, you know, Chris, when you look at that roster, just there, I'm not a big fan of their receiving core either. They just, you know, Marquise Brown, I think, and Andrews, I mean, they had 58 catches apiece, but their wide receiver core, they don't have anybody that'll really scare you, Chris. Dez Bryant's days are done. And again, these guys are just, I'd call them average receivers. Now, Jackson is probably just an average thrower of the ball. You're not going to win in this league. Well, not win Super Bowls. Let's go that high. With that kind of chemistry and combination. So Harbaugh, I mean, I think he did what he could, what he thought he had to do to win. I don't go out there and have Lamar Jackson throwing all over the place in Buffalo to begin a game. So he wanted to establish that. His running backs averaged 4 yards per carry, but they just couldn't get it together. And I think we saw what you said all the time. I mean, Jackson, I want him to beat him. I want him to make some big throws and beat me that way. And guess what? It didn't happen.
Yeah. And if you look back over his game log, Bob, now he's, you know, 3 full seasons in the league. Obviously, he's had some injuries and hasn't played all 16 games. But 3 seasons in the league, 1 300-yard passing game during that time. You keep him in the pocket. You don't let him run all over you. And he's just not going to beat you. He's just not. He's not going to throw you to a win. That's just not going to happen. Yeah. Look, you know me. I'm old school football. Run the ball, play good defense. I believe that, and I still think that can win championships. But when I think you are so one-sided, like the Steelers on the opposite side, when Ben Roethlisberger is throwing 65 passes a game, you're not going to win. I mean, you just become too one-dimensional. And I think the Ravens are too one-dimensional. And it's really all around Lamar Jackson. Stop him. you're going to stop the Ravens. One more, Bob. And of the top free agents, and this isn't a very deep free agent class for great players, but it is pretty top heavy. There are some really good ones. And then, you know, Dak Prescott, AJ Green, Bud Dupree in Pittsburgh, Allen Robinson, Shaq Barrett, Patrick Peterson. I could go on. But there are, you know, some really good ones at the top. Who do you think is the biggest name that lands somewhere else next season?
Well, like you said, Chris, I mean, we've seen better free agent classes, but there are a lot of recognizable names out there that could probably help other franchises. I think some of the guys you mentioned are probably going to be staying put. I mean, but when it comes to me, I was looking down a list throughout the week, and some of the guys that came out, so mostly the wide receiver core, Chris, when you have guys, you know, like your A.J. Greens and T.Y. Hilton, and even Sammy Watkins for a team that might go to the Super Bowl. And Allen Robinson for the, they had mentioned him on the telecast last weekend as far as Atlantic. These are guys that actually might move for all different reasons. You know, AJ Green, from what I gather, a lot of the Bengal fans just didn't think he put in 100% effort this year. And, you know, a place like New England might be attractive to him, you know, once they get a quarterback in place there, because, he may have, renewed life in a place like that. And you know what Belichick can do with guys that have spent some years in the league. You know, Watkins, it's going to be hard to pay him, Chris. He's probably the best receiver out there and is probably going to make a ton of money. Now, can Kansas City afford to pay a lot of the guys on that team? You know what they're paying some of those guys already. So he's probably going to move on, and you wonder if he might land in one of the other places. And I mentioned Robinson and A.J. Green. You know, Robinson is one of these guys. You wonder, Chris, what he can do with a very good quarterback throwing him the ball. I just don't think Mitch Trubisky or whoever they get there is going to make him the star that he probably should be. So the wide receiver core, they immediately come to the forefront for me. And, of course, the big story up here, Cam Newton, Chris, not going to stay in New England. Where does he go? Well, it just happens that a guy like Phillip Rivers retires this week, and the Colts, you think Cam Newton probably wants to go to a team that can probably win now, Chris? That same would be, it would seem to me to be a good fit. I don't know if the Colts are that big on him, but they may have to go in that direction of a guy that's had some experience and actually can maybe get to the playoffs. Maybe he'll have better luck in Indy than he did in New England.
There you have it, folks. That's this week's edition of Bob's Take. Bob, before we get to our first guest, Greg Lloyd, remind our listeners about the great interviews that you're putting up as you talk about on the TV side on Monday Night Sports 14 on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's the, if you go to YouTube, you could search Monday Night Sports 14. Again, every day on Twitter, well, during the week, Chris, you know, we celebrate the birthdays of past guests we've had either on the TV or radio side. There's usually at least five of them a week. We talk to so many people, and that's when we put up an interview to recognize their birthday. So, you know, just this past week, Eddie Kennison, our great friend, had a birthday. Put an interview with him up there. Mark Littell, the former Major League pitcher. Those are just two this week. But just keep, I would just say, keep your eye on Twitter or go to YouTube, and you'll see a lot of those good interviews.
All right, we've got our first guest, Greg Lloyd, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Greg right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is Steelers Hall of Famer and TNT guest Hall of Famer, Greg Lloyd. And as you guys know, Greg's my all-time favorite player. He's a guy who has been open, honest, and telling it like it is since the first time he joined us a little over 5 years ago. He's from Miami, Florida, played his college ball at Fort Valley State, which is in South Georgia, where he was a three-time All-Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference selection. There, he was a three-time defensive MVP, and as a senior, he was the Conference Player of the Year and a first-team Sheridan All-American. He was a sixth-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1987 and played in the league from 87 to 1998, almost all with the Steelers, played his last season in Carolina. He was selected to five straight Pro Bowls from 1992 to 96, was the AFC Defensive Player of the Year in 1994. He's a member of the Steelers all-time team and was inducted into their Hall of Honor last year.
sometimes, folks, you know, in life, we get to meet our sports heroes and they're not like we hoped they would be. And that's absolutely not the case with Greg. He's been fantastic every single time we've had the privilege of having him on the show. And tonight's the 10th time, which is a huge honor. And we are very excited he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Greg, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys, how's it going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and yours. Greg, I got to start off on a somber note. Want to get your thoughts on the passing of Kevin Green. What a great talent, what a great Steeler for the years that you guys got the opportunity to play together. And I know you were there when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Just wanted you to reflect a moment on Kevin.
Well, you know, it's real tough, guys, when you lose somebody that, not just a teammate. I mean, you know, Kevin was a friend. And see, friend for me is something that's few and far and in between, if you know what I mean. And, you know, kind of almost count them on my hands. But Kevin was a friend. He's that guy that, you know, we didn't talk that much, but when we got back together, we just picked up from where we left off at. But more important than that, you know, Kevin was he was a family man. He was a father. He was a husband. He loved God, you know, and those are the things that, you know, those are the kind of people you want in your life and you want around you, you know. I mean, we did some crazy, said some crazy stuff, had some crazy sound bites playing football. But, you know, it's kind of like I tell people all the time, I think I used to tell you guys all the time, it's kind of like going out and, you know, Clark Kent going into the phone booth and coming out being Superman. I mean, that's a role we play. But, you know, people who really know us are those family people. And Kevin, when he came to us, then I believe it was 92. And we spent 3 years together all season. Kevin came to my house. I went to visit him when he lived in Anniston and stuff like that. So, you know, we really got to know each other. And I could really appreciate him and stuff like that. So for me, I took it hard. I was still taken aback and still in unbelief after 3 days of hearing, you know, after hearing this. And then it probably didn't soak in until LeVon Kirkland came to the house and he and I drove to Destin for this, for his passing, you know, with family. And it kind of set in then. You know, a good person. You know, this world has lost a good father, a good person, a good husband. You know, definitely a great football player, Hall of Famer by no means, but by all means. But at the same time, like you say, he was just a good friend to those he came in contact with. You know, he was Kevin Gray. I mean, I don't even think that I can say what I need to say about Kevin, you know, in the time that we have a lottery. Just know that he'll be missed by all of us. And, you know, I'm just sincerely thrilled that I had the opportunity to play with him and get to know him.
And Greg, I went back and watched Kevin's Hall of Fame speech, and he talked about how upset the rest of the defense was when someone made a solo tackle because you guys were supposed to hold the guy up so everyone else could get a piece of that tackle. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you could talk about sound bites, if they had us mic'd up, you guys would be cracking up, man, you know, because we were saying some crazy stuff. I mean, there's a couple of times in there. I think I've seen a couple of times in there when, especially quarterbacks, you know, like now, I mean, you know, Kevin and I would probably still be, you know, retired and still paying fines from our pension, you know, with the way you have to treat quarterbacks now. But definitely, you know, the thing was all about game tackling. Somebody go out and make a single tackle. He's like, come on, man, hold him up just a little bit longer, you know, and stuff. And we, you know, but we laugh about it. We get to the sideline, stuff like that. Because, you know, our motto back then was we were literally trying to make people quit playing football. We didn't care about tackling. We didn't care about, I mean, not in the sense like they tackle now, if that's what you want to call it. But we wanted people to feel the pain every down. We wanted people to quit. We wanted to hear the announcement when people got back to wherever they went, when we left, to say that every one of their offensive linemen, backs, and quarterbacks decided to retire. That's how we went out on the field. Now, I know that's being, you know, a little, you know, out there, but that's the way we practiced. That's the way we trained. That was our mentality. And that's why we were the way we were when we played.
Greg, I got to get your thoughts on the Steelers here the last few weeks. Obviously, the season didn't end the way any of us wanted to. And boy, it sure seemed like after 11-0, things went way off the rails. I know we had a lot of injuries and things of that nature, but an embarrassing loss to the Cleveland Browns. I thought I woke up and went to hell after I saw watched that game. Wow. What are your thoughts? Wow.
Well, I mean, 11-0, you know, historically for the Steelers. I mean, it's a history, they made history and all that. I knew somewhere in there that they would lose a game. Matter of fact, between you and me, I was hoping that they would lose a game just to get that monkey off their back. You know, let them lose a game to somebody that was good. Let's still keep fighting. Let's fight, but let's lose a game to somebody that at least got a mascot. Freaking. you know, somebody that just ain't named the Detroit football team or the Washington. You got to be freaking kidding me. So I let it go. You know, I could say a lot about it, but I let it go. But then after that, it was just like, it almost like complacency set in, you know. And in my head, because I live here in Atlanta, I had watching the last, you know, five games or so that they were playing. It just reminded me of the second half of the New England-Atlanta Super Bowl. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
And it was like, we got this thing won, we're going to do this, and then we're going to come out on the second half, and we're not going to do anything we did the first half. We're just going to play prevent defense. We're going to be lackadaisical. I mean, dude, it was garbage. And that's something you don't hardly – I don't think I've used the word garbage concerning the Pittsburgh Steelers since I retired. It was garbage. I mean, straight garbage.
Mm-hmm. Bob, questions for Greg?
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Greg, and we're going to stay on that topic of garbage because the last few weeks we've talked about the lack of tackling, which you just brought up. Arthur Motes talked to us. Victor Green talked about us. These guys are just disgusted with how many missed tackles they see, how many whips. How many guys are jumping over people? I can go on and on. I needed to get Greg Lloyd's attitude and quotes about this because it's just so bad, and I'm seeing it even in the playoffs, Greg. It's, what are they teaching guys at the college level, high school level, or is this ever going to get fixed?
Well, I mean, again, you understand it now, and I get it, but I don't agree with it. This is my with all these new rules and tackling and all this stuff. The faces of the NFL have changed so much because of the new hitting and tackling rules. So you can find almost anybody that's fast and can catch and can run playing in the NFL now because guys like me are antiquated. Guys like, you know, Kevin Green and Ray and all those guys, we're not there anymore because when we play, we hit you in the mouth. We hit you underneath the chin. See, guys know they can't do that no more. So tackling is not, it's not stressed anymore because guys are more concerned about, coach, I don't want to get fined. I don't want to do this. You know, and like I say, I see both sides of it. I know it's a catch-22. I see both sides of it. I understand you don't want to get tackled, but if it's me, see, I'm almost, and that's what you have. If it's me, my thing's going to be, that's me. That's my number. That's my name on the back of my jersey. And when that camera flashes on there, most people out there are ignorant to the fact that what the rules are and stuff like that. Most people, all they want to care about is get him on the ground. And then they will kind of say, oh man, that was a bad call. That was this, that was that, that was the other. My thing of it is, if it's my responsibility to tackle the guy, I got to tackle him by any means necessary. That's my job. I'm talking about within the rules. I'm not talking about tripping, face masking, and shoulder pulling. I'm talking within the rules. But my thing of it is, if it's something that I know that needs to be stressed, then guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull one of them young rookie tight ends, one of them rookie fullbacks that we got, and it's like, hey, listen, man, we ain't got to go full speed, but before or after practice, run the football, and I'm going to practice angle tackling. I mean, I'm probably going to take you down. You know, so, you know, whatever, but I'm going to take it down. That might, you know, he might get a dinner out of it. But you have to do what you have to do because this is their craft. This is what you do for a living. And this is what you are putting on the table now for people to see. You want me to eat this crap when I turn my television on and I'm like I can't do it because it's spoiled. This food that y'all putting on, this football, this tackling stuff that you guys are putting on is such garbage. That's where it belongs, such spoiled. And it belongs in the garbage, the word we talk about. And like I said, I understand that you can't expect the guy to come in there and change directions and make his body do all these kind of things, try to hit a guy. But you got to make a tackle. You got to know how to tackle. And again, it's, you are not in the seventh grade and in the eighth grade and in the 12th grade anymore where coaches are teaching. You should know how to tackle by now. And it's your job as a professional to know everything about your position and to put a product out on the field that's you, the best you. That's not a coach's job. Coach's job is to get you the information. Your job is to do all the physical stuff. And so I don't blame coaches for that. I blame individuals for that. You know, and like I said, that's within the context of the rule. And I know they don't play like we used to play and everybody wants to bring that back. But within the rules, man, you got it. You got to tackle. Like I said, Kevin and LeBron and all the guys that we played with, you know, Chad's and, you know, man, we would still be paying fines under these new rules. We would still be paying fines and be retired. But the ideal of it, we're going to get them down, you know. And like I say, it's just bad. I know you got, if we hate it and we don't like it, I know you guys don't like it. And I can't even apologize to you guys because there's really nothing that we can do about it. But I guess as an individual, I would like, if it was me in that position and playing now, hindsight, you know, 2020 going forward, I would put myself in a position to make sure that I at least knew how and I practiced tackling. You can't expect the guy to go out and tackle if they're not practicing tackling during the week, during the season. You can't expect them to do it. So, you know, it's up to the individual. And like you say, if you are a team leader, if you are a captain, if you are a Pro Bowler, all pro, all world, or whatever the heck they call them now when they make a couple of good plays, if you're that person, then that should be your job, making sure that everybody out there is good at form tackling. That's what you should be doing. You know, one of the things that we had when we was in Pittsburgh is that we had a thing called accountability. You know, and we was accountable to not Bill Cowher. We weren't accountable to Marvin Lewis and Dom Capers. We were accountable to those 10 other guys that were out there on that field. That's who we were accountable to, because that's who I was playing with. Those were the only guys out there that mattered for 60 minutes. And we hold each other accountable. You jump offside, my bad. Got to go make a play. I'll make up for that. You know, make your play. Don't go sticking your head where it don't belong. I'm counting on you to make that play. Those were the things that we did, but we practiced that way. That's what we did. And I don't think it's, I know it's not being done because the product is showing up on television. You know, and it has to be some of the nastiest, stinkiest stuff that you guys have seen and smelt in a long time, you know. And that's why I don't watch it. And I know that everybody think that you retire from football and we eat, sleep. When I played football, that's what I did because I had to get myself ready. But I cannot watch it now. I cannot watch it.
And to piggyback off what you said about how you guys approach the game, Greg, and how you actually hit during the week in practice, guys are getting hurt now more than they ever did. And, you know, you don't, you didn't, all those guys you mentioned that you play with, you've missed very few games. Is it a combination of the training methods, the guys not playing hurt anymore, or is it just a combination of all this stuff?
I kind of think it's a combination of things. I mean, it's like, if I go into a game and I know what my opponent is capable of doing, I've studied him all week long. I've watched him, you know, 8, 9, 10 games or maybe more, 20 games or how, you know, how he played and probably some games we play. Once I go in the game, I have all everything that I need. It's no different when it comes to training. Training is something when you're an NFL player, you really ain't got no time off. If I, like when I first came into the league until I left, there was no off season. I mean, it was because, you know, to bring in baseball and basketball like that. But as an off season, there's no off season. You're always training. You're always trying to get yourself better. Why? Because there's another class coming in. There's a group of young guys coming in. And they drafted another group of young guys 4 or 5 years behind you. Your thing is that you got to keep working and you got to keep outworking and you got to outwork them guys. You got to make sure that, you know, you're in that top shape. But on top of that, also, you may get a guy that's going to help you out and you don't mind showing him how to do it. So it is a combination of those things. But I think that once you understand what the rules are and everybody has them and it applies to everybody, there's something as a team, as leaders of the team, that you can do to say, hey, listen, we're going to be the best tackling team out there. We're going to do it within the confines of the rules. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to practice doing it. Okay? And you take that completely out of the equation. It's not a question, you know? Because if I were to ask both of you guys right now, who's the best tackling team in NFL that's still in the, you know, other 14 that's in the game? Who would you say?
I guess my thought would be Tampa Bay.
That's the first thing came to my mind. I would say Tampa Bay. And if you got a team like that, I know everybody's whooping and thinking that, but you know, you got a battle of the Bays coming up here, you know, so, and I'm thinking, I know Aaron Rodgers is all that. I know he's a goat like Tom Brady and all that. I know he is. But man, when I look at how that Tampa Bay defense run around and hit and tackle, I go, that can make a difference in a ball game. That can make a difference in a ball game. Everybody always talk about, you know, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. But, you know, like you said, hey, listen, man, if they can't score, they can't win. And that's how I always look at it. So that's the gist of it, man. I mean, you know, if you don't have a good defense and if you're not running the ball to run the clock out on offense, you're not going to win a Super Bowl. You're not going to win. There's no way. There's no way you go. You might not even win a game. But you got to be able to stop people. You got to be able to stop the run, and you got to be able to run the ball. I know that sounds crazy, but you got to have a defense that stops the run, and you got to have an offense that can run the ball. If you can do that, you can win. And like you say, you got to have a team that can tackle. And the Steelers have done a poor job of it. I don't want to talk about anybody else. I played there. Everybody knows the history and all that behind that. But they did a poor job. I mean, they got after the quarterback. Don't get me wrong. They got the quarterback and things of that nature. But, man, I mean, boy, they looked awful. I mean, they looked awful. I mean, I'm talking about in every aspect of the game, they looked awful. You know, I mean, I like you said, I woke up that morning after the Cleveland game, and I didn't watch the game. I just woke up and I saw 28-0 in the first quarter. I was like, oh, my God, no wonder I didn't watch that. I'm like, what happened? But just something said like, oh, wow. And then in your own backyard on top of that, you know,
yeah.
That's like your neighbor coming over to your backyard and pulling his pants down and taking the crap and then looking at you and saying, that's right. And walking back in the house, you know, it's like, what? I'm like, come on, man. So I was kind of upset about that. But hey, listen, man, like I said, they have to correct it. I mean, it's not that play. It's not something that can't be done. And I'm sure Coach Tomlin will address it and get it done and things of that nature. But, hey, man, the game is played for, you know, it's played for a reason. It's played as many games you play for a reason. But it's a 60-minute game. It's a 60-minute game for 17 games or 16 games or however long you play. And if you can't, you know, play at a level that's so high for that long, then, you know, teams are going to, you know, they're going to expose you. And that's what happened. Like you said, you can't go out there and throw 65 times and not run the football. You can't go sack the quarterback two times and let him run 200-some yards. It don't matter. You know, you got to be balanced out. So we can talk about this all night, guys. So get me off of this before they be calling me from the ceiling. So give me, y'all. You guys got to save me. Please save me here. You know?
So Greg, I got to say something that I'm biased about. And it's about guys wearing 95, right? Because as you know, I mean, you're my favorite player. And when I see guys that put the 95 on, I mean, whether it's Jarvis Jones or Chris Wormley this year, and they're thinking up the joint, it makes me mad. Yeah. I'm like, you can't put 95 on and play like that. Does it make you mad?
See, you have to join my family with that now. My sister, you know, I'm the youngest of 9 here, so my sisters and brothers will go. They'll call me and go, Greg, who is that wearing your jersey? Y'all know I don't watch that. I don't know. I said, you calling me, so obviously he must suck. There they go. There they go. Not only do he suck, who is he? We've never heard of it. Does he play? I said, girl, I don't have no, you know, say-so over there. I said, they got to get somebody to jersey. I said, but I understand. You guys used that jersey running around causing havoc, and it's sitting over there on the bench, or it's doing something that ain't got no business, you know, things of that nature. And so I had a talk with young Jarvis. You know, Jarvis is a Georgia boy. And, you know, yep. And I got a chance to see the kid play and stuff like this. But we spent some time in Mexico together doing some stuff with the Steelers over there, you know, and, you know, we were doing some teaching some football skills to the guys over there. So I got a chance to spend some time with him. And, you know, between you and us, I knew he wasn't going to be that long. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to leave it just at that. I never said anything about 95. I just went up to him and said, you know, I introduced myself. I said, all right, man, you got to represent with that jersey on. And I left it at that. But I just saw, and when I talked to him, and then I saw what he, you know, I mean, he's off season. And, you know, even in off season, if I went out of town somewhere, one of the things I had to make sure I did was there was somewhere I could work out, somewhere I could run. Because again, that's how I made my living. You know what I mean? So I had to make sure I took care of my body, and it was just so opposite of that. And so, you know, to myself and to some guys that I knew it wouldn't go nowhere, I was like, okay, this guy got when his contract is up. I said, when his contract is up, oh, Steelers gonna get rid of him. And they go, why you say that, Greg? I said, I'm just saying, he first round draft choice, bro, he's garbage. And Steelers have been notorious for picking Huey Richardson and Jarvis Jones, and, you know, we can go on and on. I mean, you know, they're not the only team, but right now, that would be the only team I'm talking about, because that's the team I play. Everybody else don't matter. I like you, Chris. I bleed black and gold.
Right.
All I care about the black and gold, all that other stuff, what somebody else is doing does not matter. You know, that's like, you know, hey, listen, I got to fix my house. I don't care. The other man's roof is off. Once I get my house fixed, I go over there and help him. But I got to fix mine first. And that's what the Steelers got to concentrate on. And that's the mentality guys have to take, you know. And there's nothing wrong with you, you know, teaching somebody how to become a professional. Yeah, you got drafted, but I'm going to teach you how to do this. I'm going to teach you how to be in this league for 10 years. I'm going to teach you how to practice. I'm going to teach you how to study. I'm going to teach you how to take care of your body. I'm going to teach you how to stay out of trouble and, you know, things of that nature right there. You know, and, you know, they, like you say, you know, some guys will get it, some guys won't. Some guys will have it sometimes, some guys won't. But, you know, it's a shot in the dark sometimes. But I just think the Steelers got to do a better job everywhere. I mean, everywhere. They got to do a better job. Like you said, there is no way in the heck Pittsburgh Steelers should be throwing the ball. Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, when you think of it as a bruising defense. And by the way, guys, let me say this, get off the subject real quick. I don't know if you guys know, and you probably do know, but I know we talked about Kevin, but, you know, Tim Lester, who was the bus driver for
Jordan,
he passed away also of COVID. And, he's right here in Atlanta. Tim does a 60 for 60 for the NFL. And I've gone out to help him out quite a few times. So you guys, you know, say your prayers and, you know, send some shouts out to him and to his wife and, two boys. And everything, but I think next the 28th, I think it's that next Wednesday, Thursday, they're having service down here for him. So, you know, you guys just keep him in mind when you guys are doing that. But yeah, I just wanted to say that Timmy was, you know, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy, you know, also. But you know, hey man, that's like I said, for me, I just think like I say, Pittsburgh's going to have to go in and they're going to have to take a look at their identity and what they want to be. Do they want to be a passing team? Do they want to be a run team? Do they want to be a defense that goes after the quarterback? Or do they want to be an all-around defense that stops the run and then open up their blitz take? You know, and so you'd be called Blitzbird again. Because, you know, we haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. I just haven't seen it. And it just really, you know, it really, really makes me angry that you have a lot of guys around there with a lot of talent, but only, you know, three or four guys are the only ones that keep showing up every game. Can't have it.
And Greg, to that end, one more before we let you go. And I want to talk, you talk about teaching and what the Steelers' identity is. And one of the things that just continues not to make sense to us are why players like you or LeVon or Chad or guys like Leon Searcy or Damani Dotson, I mean, it could go on and on, the great players that were there in the 90s. Why you guys aren't coaching for the Steelers? I mean, how Greg Lloyd isn't the linebackers coach, or at least the outside linebackers coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, makes zero sense. Why are you guys not being tapped?
All right, I'm gonna say this now, and then you know, you guys may have to be my attorneys later on. But this is how it goes. You know me. I'm gonna say it like it is. I think I told you guys, you know, I've been on your show quite some time. In 2010, I coached in Tampa Bay. I did a internship for Andy Reid in Phil Liverman, Cardell Lake for preseason. And then the following year, I did an internship in Tampa Bay for Raheem Morris when he was the head coach there. And, you know, he kept me based on the fact that I wasn't just interacting with the linebackers. I was telling the offensive linemen what we see, what we do as outside linebacker defense, what the little things that they do that give away run and pass, try not to do it. You know, things that we look for when they try to, you know, get there. You know, so Rod kept me because of that, not just because of outside. The linebackers I had that year, I had one good linebacker. That was Barry Rude. Remember B. Rude?
Absolutely.
B. Rude was the only linebacker on that defense that was decent. Yeah. Everybody else, garbage. They were straight garbage. And every day, that's what they heard. Now, that being said, when you played the game at a high level, your expectation when you come in to be coach, and I saw that, witnessed this from Joe Green, your expectation of your player is going to be what you used to do, how you did. The young guys today don't want that. The young guys today are concerned about contracts, money, cars, and houses. Okay?
I hear you.
Okay?
Yeah.
You know, I know this is a family show. You saw I did that. But that's what they're concerned about. They're not concerned about legacy. They're not concerned about that other stuff. So as a linebacker who comes in there, you've got other coaches who are being hired, like Jerry Osowski played with me. Key, don't get me wrong. Key was a hell of a linebacker, underside linebacker from Pitt. And when Key got in the game, Key knew what he was going to do, where he was going to be. He knew where everybody was going to be. So I see Jerry O being, you know, inside linebacker coach. He's all the linebacker coaches now. But yeah, I can see him being inside linebacker coach. But what happens a lot of times is that I know me, and I have to, you know, I would have to dial it down. But my thing about it is teaching the things that you know that can help those guys, you know, become successful. Yes, we can do. Like I said, going back to teaching them how to study, teaching them how to study film, teaching them how to study a poem, teaching them how to take care of their bodies and things of that nature. Yeah, you know, you can do that. But at the same time, setting a tone for practice, set a tone for how the game is supposed to be played. What happens a lot of time, Chris and Bob, is you got a guy or you got a coach or you have a coordinator who never played football, who hires guys who most of the time never play football, because what they don't want a lot of time is they don't want to say something in a meeting and have a Carnell Lake, LaVon Kirkland, Greg Lloyd, Chad Brown go, that ain't gonna work. Excuse my language. Like, that ain't gonna work. You know? Now, we wouldn't say it out loud. But we would probably get into the coach's meeting and go, now, listen, man, this ain't gonna work. Because, you know, it hypothetically, we can put anything up on the board and assume that it's going to work. But you got to understand, those guys on the other side of the ball get paid, too. But having played the game, understand that we cannot run it. Every time we used to get in this defense, we used to get killed. That's like, yeah, and then just scratch it. So what happens is it becomes more of a how can I say this nice? It becomes more of a measuring contest. Did you get between the lines? Y'all get it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, it becomes that. Guys are more afraid that you're going to be more right than they are, and the players are going to look at you more than they look at them, and they don't want that. And so that's why they will hire a guy as a linebacker coach or as a head coach or as a coordinator and he'll come in here, hire guys that same way. And so now it's like you got to listen to guys that study football. But like I say, if you ain't never had your hand hit in between two helmets in Green Bay when it's like -14 degrees, if you ain't never, you know, had your shoulder almost separated and it goes down your spine, and you ain't got no feeling in your hands or your shoulders for 3 or 4 plays. If you've never had that done, and you never got dinged, what they call concussion. Now, we never got dinged and, you know, wanted to come out of the game, but didn't come out of the game because you didn't want to let your team. If you've never done that, I kind of didn't want to talk to you. And if you ever get a chance to talk to Marvin Lewis, Marvin Lewis will attest to what I'm saying. I called Marvin for probably the first full 5 years Marvin was in Pittsburgh. When I found out that Marvin had never played football, I was like, this dude coming here, all these freaking drills, and we've been here for, I tell you, we laugh at it now. You know, we laugh at it now, but Marvin's coming out, I'm going to do three of these drills, and I'm done. And we got a game to play. I said, this is not college. You know, and some people said, well, Greg, you know, you would be, no, it's like, I got to get me ready to play on Sunday. Marvin going to be up in the booth. If I'm tired, y'all going to be looking at me like, well, Greg was hanging out all night. What's going on with him? So this is what I'm talking about. I do what I need to do to get me ready. And going out in practice and running 15 different drills and pregame, I mean, warm up, it's not helping me. It's not helping me at all. All it's doing is making me tired. It's going to make me even more tired come Sunday. So knowing your craft, knowing what you need to do to get you ready, that's what position coaches do. And I think that's what happened. We, as former players, have such a high level of what we used to do and how we did it, underpaid and all. And these guys are overpaid, and they don't want to do half of what we used to do. And they're not ready for us to come in and tell these guys that, because it's like, you know, I mean, I say, you know, what guy wants to hear Greg Lloyd say, that's garbage? You know, I mean, he could be trying his best, but, you know, and he said, hey, coach, what you think of that? I'm going to say garbage. If it's garbage, I'm going to say garbage. I'm not going to sit there and tell a guy making, you know, regardless of how much money he's making, but he's a professional football player, you know, one of however many we got in the league, a few. I'm not going to sit there and tell him that he did something good when it's not, when I can get somebody from the stands to come down and put a uniform on and do exactly what he just did. I'm not going to tell him that. But see, that's what happens a lot of times. Coaches are stroking these guys and doing all that because of, you know, some scout got him, brought him in, and, you know, they don't pay him now, and it'll make this scout look bad if they, you know, get rid of him. And it's like, well, guess what? You got two options. You can get rid of this scout and hire somebody else, or you can get rid of this guy and get the money to somebody who wants to play. My thing about it is, at the end of the day, as a team, or because it's a corporation, you're about making money. And the way you make money is win. Am I wrong?
Nope. You're right. Agreed.
But like I say, you know, you can't, football is not a game of feelings. You can't be out there carrying your feelings around on your shoulder pad. Football is one of those type of games where you keep your feelings, you know, you lock the bad boys up in the chest and leave them in the car, in the parking lot, you leave them at home with your wife, your girlfriend, or you leave them somewhere, but you don't bring them on the football field. And like you say, everybody's not ready for that. You see, everybody's not. You think coaches and beat coordinators ready to hear me talk like this in a meeting? They're not ready for that. They say, this is garbage. They're not ready for that. They're not ready for that. Because the first thing I'm going to say, what you don't done? You know? And everybody's like, why you say? Because my thing is like, I'm just trying to get them to understand that there's more than one way to do things. Just the way you're doing it, theoretically, I understand that. You studied that. But I played it. And because I played, I'm telling you that's not going to work. Okay? So let's go out here and run it. Yeah. And then when we run it three or four times, you see it not working, and then you still put it in the game plan. To me, that's what we call doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. What we call that?
Insanity. Yep.
Yeah, that's what it's called, insanity. But we want to be insane on the football field, but we want to be insane in a way where the other teams over there going like, listen, we can't wait to get out of here. Referee, please let that clock keep running. We can't wait to get out of here. And that's how you want to be. But like you said, you know, we want to get back to interrogate the game where, you know, let the guys play. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, if you see a guy you think is targeted, is obvious, I understand that. But man, to be able to put a lick on somebody and you can hear it in the next state, come on. What's happened to that? It's like, what's happened to that? I mean, people used to come to Pittsburgh, man, and it was like, buddy, if y'all win today, I promise you all y'all going to be in the hot tub before y'all get off that bus. Everybody is going to be in the hot tub with ice on for the gun. That's how we play. Am I lying, Chris? Am I lying?
No. That's how we play. No, you are not.
That's how we play. But that's also how we practice. We practice that way also. The games on Sunday were easy compared to the practice. And I think that's the big difference now. And I understand, like, try to keep everybody. But like you say, you look at the ratio of injuries when we played and injuries right now, what's the difference?
Yeah. Agreed. Greg,
there it is,
we
guys.
Can't thank you enough for bringing your passion and coming back and being a part of the show. You're fantastic, my friend. We always enjoy time.
Hey, man, I appreciate you guys having me. Anytime you guys need me, man, just give me a shout. I don't get to talk football that often to people because most people don't have a clue. So I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Greg. Well,
take care. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
All right, Chris and Bob, man. Thanks for having me again. You guys have a good night.
Good night.
You too. See you, Greg.
All right. Talk, guys.
That's the great Greg Lloyd, Bob. It doesn't get any better than that.
Doesn't sound like a guy approaching his 56th birthday. Do you ever see a guy that intense at that age, Chris?
No.
But
no.
He brings it every time he's on. And you know, when you ask that question about coaching, I knew the answer before he said it. It's not about race. It's not about resume. It's about his expectations and how he played the game. And he went into it in detail, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I love that about him. All right, we've got our next guest, Tony Collins, and our 5-star picks of the week right on the other side of this real quick station break.
You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
And now back, leading us through our 5-star picks of the week for the conference championship games, is former Patriots Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. How are you, Tony?
Hi, Tony.
Doing fantastic. How you doing, Chris and Bob?
We're great, thank you. So, Tone, looking back to last week, one of us went 4-0 last week and got himself back in this race. And you went 3-1. Shockingly, Bob was 2-2. So this is quite a tight race between the three of us heading into the last three games of the season. You and I now are tied for the lead at 11-4. Bob is 10-5. So who knows? Three games to go. Could be anybody's race. Tone, you could get back the title. I could finally win one, and Bob could come back and still get it. But it's going to be a fun 3 weeks, my friend. Don't make a wrong move now. By the way, our friend Angelo Kane says no more stink eye on the Bills. So no, he's listening.
Buffalo's playing good football right now, man.
Yeah, they are. And let's start off with the NFC Championship, the first game. It's on Sunday, Bucks and Packers. So, Tone, want to get your thoughts. Packers favored by 3.5, over under 51.5. So, can your boy Tom Brady and the Bucks go into Lambeau Field and upset the Packers and get Brady into his 10th Super Bowl?
I mean, that's one of the roughest places to go into and play. I know it's going to be cold. Tampa Bay is Tampa Bay. They're used to the sunshine and the warm weather. Going up to Green Bay, man, it's going to be a tough deal, especially the way Aaron is playing right now. He's playing MVP football. Their defense is playing well. But Tampa Bay has this guy named Brady, and he's making me another believer again. I watched him last week, and he played great football last week. And I think he's going to play great football again on Sunday. And I'm going with the upset. I'm going to go with my boy Brady, man. I'm thinking he can pull it off and play in the Super Bowl at home. That would be incredible. So I'm going with Tampa Bay. 24-21, Brady went in drive. They kicked the field goal. They win the game. Tampa Bay.
Tony, before we get to Bob's pick on this, I quick thought. So have we finally answered the question? You know, was it Brady or Belichick all these years?
I got to say it was both of them, because the last couple of years Brady was in New England. He didn't have any weapons. But you see the weapons that he has down in Tampa, and that's the whole key to it. I mean, Brady's Brady and Belichick is Belichick. But when Brady had the weapons, They were unstoppable. In those last couple of years, you know, Brady didn't have the weapons that he had, and the offense wasn't clicking like it was. But I still kind of say it was both of them. I really can't say Brady is that man. If he has weapons like he has right now, Brady can do a lot of damage to a lot of football teams. And I really think he's going to do some damage up in Green Bay this week.
Bob, what are your thoughts on the Bucs-Packers?
I think Tony made a lot of good points there. You know, I'm just too impressed right now with Rodgers. He's going to be the MVP. and they're playing at home. The weather's not going to be good. I know Brady's had experience playing in bad weather conditions, but most of his other players have not. This is a whole different animal. The only thing you're not dealing with is a full Green Bay crowd, but it's going to be nasty, guys. Rodgers is going to show you why he's the MVP. I just think it's a little tough for Brady to go up there and do what he did last week. It's another road game. So I got to go with the home team. You know, Green Bay, I'm going to say the elements play a factor here, but Green Bay still puts 30 points up. 30-24, Green Bay.
Wow, okay. Well, you know, guys, I mean, these two teams played back in week six. That's a game the Bucs won 38-10. Now that game was down in Tampa. And the Packers actually had a 10-0 lead at the end of the first quarter there. And then the Bucs, you know, run off 38 unanswered. Rodgers ended up throwing two picks, was sacked four times in that game. And Brady only threw for 166 and two touchdowns. The difference back then, you know, was a pick six and then Ronald Jones running for 113 yards and two touchdowns for Tampa Bay. The Bucs, look, when you look back at that game, they blitzed 41% of the time and 56% of the time on third down. And I expect to see a lot more of that, trying to get Rodgers to have to throw quickly and, you know, those underneath routes. And then, you know, the run blitzes clogging up the lanes for Aaron Jones, who last week, boy, a guy averaged 7.1 yards per carry. Now, Bucs defense, sixth in the league this year in yards allowed, and they were number one against the run. They only allowed 80.6 yards per game. So, you know, to me, the game is going to fall on Aaron Rodgers' shoulders. We know how great he is, and I'm sure the Packers are fine with that. But, you know, the Bucs, 15 interceptions, you know, sixth in the league. When they, you know, when you look at the plus minus, right, they were a plus eight in the takeaway giveaway ratio. And Green Bay's defense was 13th against the run. So it might be a little bit of running space for Tampa Bay. You know, we see that, you know, they're number one against the run and we're the Bucs. So, and like you guys said, no drop off in Tom Brady's game. I just, you know what? I said it last week. I bet against them a whole bunch of times. I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to do it again. I think he gets back to a 10th Super Bowl. I'm with Tony. I think the Bucs win it 30-27. Over on the AFC side, Tone, Bills at Chiefs. The Chiefs are a 3-point favorite and the over-under is 53.5. Tony, like I said, you tried to put the stink eye on the Bills last week. They were able to overcome it. You're going to double down and try to do it again, defy Ange and go against the Bills again?
You know what? I got to say to all my Buffalo Bills fans, man, you guys have had a fantastic season. You guys got a great defense. You got a superstar quarterback, rising quarterback that's going to be, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, he can, you know, pretty much make Pro Bowls every year. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, he'll be a legend in Buffalo. Josh Allen is a superstar right now. And he has the weapons. But the only thing is, they got to go to Kansas City. It's tough to win in Kansas City, especially with Mahomes. I'm pretty sure everybody thinks that Mahomes, the concussion thing, they're worried about that, but you shouldn't worry about that. He's going to play great. He's going to be great. Kansas City's going to be great, and Kansas City's going to go back to the Super Bowl again. Unfortunately for the Buffalo Bills fans, you won't make it. So we're going to go with Kansas City. I think it's going to be a close. I think it's going to be a high scoring game. And I just don't think Buffalo can put up as many points as Kansas City. So we're going to go 37-34, Kansas City.
Bob, what do you think?
I have it similar to Tony. Yeah, you got to give the credit to the Bills for the season they had. But the Chiefs, if Mahomes is playing, and then obviously seems like he's going to be probably close to 100%. You know, if they're playing with a backup quarterback, you got to go with Buffalo. But Mahomes, you know, it's such a huge difference. I mean, they beat Cleveland without even scoring in the fourth quarter. But the Chiefs, they're pretty healthy right now, guys. And, you know, Williams, the running back, looked good. And I don't think they're going to have an answer for Kelsey, who's going to have a huge game. So I'm with Tony. I mean, Kansas City, I'm going 34-24.
And I'm with both you guys. I like Kansas City as well. I mean, the forecast is for about a 50% chance of rain with a high of 42 in Kansas City on Sunday. So if it rains, that certainly could make the game a little more interesting, because neither team is great at running the ball, which may just be a result, as you guys talked about how great both of their quarterbacks are. And the Bills were 20th in rushing yards. The Chiefs were 16th. The Chiefs were the number one passing offense. Bills were third. So the question is going to be around Mahomes and his health, but as we've heard throughout the day, and then Andy Reid saying he's confident that Mahomes is going to play. The thing about this game, and I think, Tony, you're right about the high scoring pieces, neither one of these teams was good at getting after the quarterback. I mean, the Bills only had 38 sacks. The Chiefs only 32. So you think about it, just a little over or right at 2 sacks per game. And the Bills were led by linebacker A.J. Klein and defensive end Mario Addison. Both of those guys had 5. Chris Jones led the Chiefs at 7.5. So, and to give you some context about that, I mean, you add all three of those together and it barely adds up to what T.J. Watt had for the Steelers. So good news for the Chiefs is because Pat Mahomes probably isn't going to be under constant pressure, and both quarterbacks are, you know, going to be able to find open receivers. And Bob, to your point, I think that what that means, and the Bills like to play zone and cover too, is you're going to have Travis Kelce all day long. I think that's going to be the difference of the game. I think Kelce kills the Bills and that defense. So I'm with both of you guys. I am taking Kansas City. I think they win the game 31-24. Tony, before we let you go, remind our listeners about the great things you're doing to help kids go to college.
TonyCollinsFoundation.org. Go to our website. We're hopefully everything will be back up, this COVID thing, next year, so we can get back at helping kids out, helping them get off to college.
Tony, you're the best, my friend. Stay safe out there. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Yes, sir. God bless, guys.
Take care,
Tony. See you, Tony. That's former Pro Bowl running back Tony Collins. We've got our next guest, Zig Fricassi, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Zig right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
And now back in making his 12th appearance with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate, it's not only one of our all-time favorite guests, but one of our all-time favorite people on the planet, and that is SiriusXM radio host and TNT guest Hall of Famer Zig Fricassi. You can hear Zig hosting multiple shows there on SiriusXM, NFL's channel, plus This Week in College Hockey. Zig is one of the great interviewers you'll ever hear anywhere on any sort of medium. We had the honor of inducting Zig as part of our 2015 Thursday Night Tailgate Guest Hall of Fame class. Bob and I are even more honored to call him a friend, because a finer individual you are not going to find anywhere. And we are delighted he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Zig, how are you, my friend?
Hi, Zig. Chris and Bob, I got to keep you on the payroll with all those flowery compliments. I love it. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, Zig.
We're fantastic, Zig. How have you been this year?
It's been a challenge, needless to say, obviously, with everything going on with COVID. And, you know, in addition to my duties at SiriusXM Sports, I also, as you know, do the updates. And it seems as though, you know, every other story is, you know, this game has been postponed or canceled because of COVID-19 and all that. So it's really changed the way I think you kind of cover sports and everything like that. But it's been good, you know, to have hockey back, the NBA back, and, you know, you got to give the NFL full marks, guys, for, you know, trudging through this season. I had my doubts. Usually I'm an optimist thinking, you know, we're going to get through this, but then I'm thinking, you know what, if the infections keep rising, and especially in some of the hotbed areas, how they're going to get through this. But you got to give Roger Goodell and, of course, Demoris Smith and the NFLPA and the whole league, you know, 1,000% credit, if there's such a thing, of getting through this season. And now we've got 2 elite games on Sunday. So all in all, it's been one hell of a year, or as the Grateful Dead once sang, what a long, strange trip it's been. Believe me, it's been strange.
Yes, it has. Zig, we certainly want to get your thoughts on the conference championship games. Want to get to that in a little bit, but want to start off, I know you're a big Cowboys fan. Want to get your thoughts on what you saw from them without Dak, and then with Dak, you know, being a free agent, what are your thoughts? Where do they go from here?
Gosh, I hope they don't get any worse, Chris. You know, full disclosure, Mike Nolan, the embattled defensive coordinator, is a former co-host of mine, and I consider him a friend, and it just killed me to see, you know, what transpired down in Dallas. But, you know, I guess hindsight being 2020, you know, the question that needs to be asked is, why did they try to change the defense, especially with no training camp and no preseason to speak of? Now, as the season got better, or season went along, the defense seemed to get better, and they were actually creating turnovers like they hadn't in recent years. But the defense was just way too bad. And now hopefully Dan Quinn and his staff comes in and fixes things. Offensively, you know, you're hoping with Dak coming back fully healthy, is Zeke going to be motivated once again? If you have your Pro Bowl tackles coming back and Collins and, of course, Tyron Smith and getting your O-line fixed and adding a couple of playmakers on defense, hey, you know, the NFC East was up for grabs for the final day of the season. Had the Cowboys taken care of business, there was a chance they could have won the NFC East even with a record like they had. But I still think there are a couple of playmakers, especially on defense, away. Offensively, like I mentioned, you know, Dak comes back, and obviously they got a real good set of receivers. And with Blake Jarwin getting hurt, you know, Schultz, some of the younger tight ends were able to develop this year. So a good draft, maybe a couple free agents here and there. I can see the Cowboys being back in the mix this year in the NFC East.
You know, one of the things, obviously, with the Steelers and the Cowboys playing each other this year, and the Steelers got lucky to get out of that game with a win. But, boy, I sure was impressed with Garrett Gilbert. He, you know,
yes.
Kid, you know, fourth quarterback from out of nowhere, came into that game, and I thought presented himself pretty darn well. You got Dax a free agent, so is Andy Dalton a free agent as well. To me, Garrett earned an opportunity to make a to be a backup quarterback in this league. What were your thoughts on what you saw from him?
You know, you're right, Chris, and made me wonder, you know, obviously Ben DiNucci, who was trying to do his Pat Mahomes impression on that Sunday night game, throwing sidearm balls all over, like, who the hell is this guy, you know? So I know, you know, because obviously there was the connection with McCarthy's brother from his basketball playing days at Pitt and all this. But, you know, I thought DiNucci was out of class in that game against the Eagles. And then they bring in Garrett Gilbert. And I got to tell you, you know, for a kid who hadn't played a whole lot, you know, he did have a pretty nice college career, you know. I mean, let's face it, he put up some good numbers at Texas Tech. He seemed to have poise in that game against the Steelers. You know, he had Amari Cooper, I think it was, with the touchdown. And, you know, they were within, you know, winning that game until the Steelers drove down in the final 2 minutes to, I thought, steal one there at Jerry World. So I'm not sure if Dalton comes back, just for the simple reason he might think he's still a starter in the National Football League. He may wind up going to a team as sort of a bridge keeper, you know, in case another team, you know, let's just say the Bears as an example, even though I don't think it's going to happen. But a team like that where they bring in a guy like Dalton and then they draft a quarterback where then obviously, you know, he's more like a place setter so the other guy can develop. So, but thing is, guys, if Andy kind of outprices himself and maybe at this point in his career he's a backup, you know, if they can get him for the same kind of money they did this past year, I could see Dallas keeping him around because I know he and Dak and Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, had a good rapport. But, you know, to your point on Garrett Gilbert, I you know, it was only one game sample size, but I've seen worse performances. I think he's earned a spot in the NFL, and if the Cowboys keep him as a third starter, if Dalton leaves, I think he does have a chance to be the backup. So to answer your question, Chris, I like what I saw in that game, even though Dallas lost to Pittsburgh.
Speaking of quarterbacks staying around, one of the things that Bob and I have been talking about over the last couple of weeks are obviously we saw Phillip Rivers retire this week. You know, is it time for my, like, Big Ben? To me, I think, you know, based on his cap number, I think the Steelers got to, you know, kind of do the same thing they did with Troy Polamalu. I think they got to tell Ben it's time. And then based on what we saw from Drew Brees in this past weekend's game against the Bucks, it kind of feels like it's time for Drew to walk away as well. What are your thoughts on Roethlisberger and Brees?
To Big Ben, you know, I mean, what is he, 38 years old now? And the fact that he had to throw the ball, you know, off a surgically repaired elbow over 500 times this year, that's not a recipe to win, I'm telling you. Although the Steelers were 11-0 at one point, and, you know, they ultimately did get into the playoffs. You got to wonder, you know, where the direction of that organization is. Obviously, you got a good young talent in Claypool as a receiver. Juju's a free agent. Does he want to stay around? You know, the running game needs to be fixed. There's no question about that. Pouncey, I didn't think looked all that good down the stretch. DeCastro had his issues of the offensive line. So, and then you saw that sort of poignant thing on the sideline there where Pouncey came, you know, sat by Big Ben. He says, I feel more sick for you than myself because, you know, I did this because I want, you know, I wanted to win for you. So he's hinted at retirement in the past. And, you know, is at this point in time now in his life, is he, you know, wanting to be more of the husband, the family man, and, you know, he's earned his millions. It's not like he needs the money to play. So my hunch is if he does anything, he might play one more year. If not, then I think now might be the time to go out. And how appropriate would that be? He goes out with the guy that, you know, was drafted above him in that 2004 class, in Philip Rivers, who had a very, very good career. I'm not sure it's Hall of Fame career. He never got to a Super Bowl, and, you know, he put up some stats and everything like that, but I don't know. I see him as a Hall of Famer. Whereas Breeze, yeah, I definitely think it's time. He's played through a multitude of injuries, especially this year. Was it a dozen fractured ribs and, you know, some other things? I think his wife even said he played foot and other injuries as well. He never had the strongest arm. It was a struggle for the Saints this year, and he's already got a broadcast gig lined up with NBC. So, you know, Marv Levy's one of his famous lines is, if you're thinking about retirement, you probably have. So it wouldn't shock me if either one calls it a career, and it's a loss for the NFL because with Big Ben, obviously, he restored Super Bowl glory, as did Breeze in New Orleans. And also, let's not forget what he did, you know, for that community post-Katrina. I mean, New Orleans was an absolute mess after Hurricane Katrina. He comes in, Sean Payton comes in. All of a sudden, they start to win. They won a Super Bowl. They've been consistent throughout. So not only did he do it on the field, but off the field in the New Orleans community, and after that little bit of a political thing earlier in the offseason, that kind of blew over because I think he realized he hurt his teammates, and I think he became even more, how would you say, ingratiated with the teammates, including the African-American player. So I think from a societal standpoint, he contributed a lot too. So I could actually see both of them walking away from the game and, you know, probably both wind up in Canton in 5 years.
Bob, questions for Zig?
It's always an honor to speak with you, Zig, and happy new year to you and yours. And I always want to pop off your head some of this stuff going on here in the East. Now, New England, of course, Zig, here, things could not be worse for Patriot fans seeing Brady do what he did this year. Of course, Newton flopping here. What do you see as far as the near future quarterback? What kind of quarterback can come in here depending on the coordinator, Zig? And, you know, Belichick's future, if you have to look into a crystal ball, give us some thoughts of where that franchise is right now.
Bob, always good to be with you, my friend. And, yeah, you know, I mean, it was I was not surprised that departure came. I kept telling people, anybody that would listen, this is going to be it with Tom Brady in New England, because I think he saw the writing on the wall. He realized that he doesn't have many weapons to work with. I think maybe, too, this is the time of his career, even though he doesn't have anything to prove. He wanted to prove I can win without Belichick, and here he is going to his 14th championship game, his first with the Buccaneers. So, you know, I think it just goes to show Tom Brady, I think, could be great if, you know, if three of us were blocking for him. So the guy could just flat out win. To the Patriots, and obviously Cam Newton, you know, I guess that move made sense at the time because I think it was one of those things where Bill wanted to prove he could win without Tom Brady, and I think Cam Newton wanted to prove that he could still play. Well, there were some instances where Cam could still play, but there were also instances where you could tell that the guys had it. You know, I mean, the injuries in terms of the feet, the arm, the shoulder and everything. Cam was never a great thrower to begin with, and I think that was just magnified as the season went on. So if I'm the Patriots, I guess I got to decide if McDaniels is going to be back, first of all. So if that's the case, do they keep the offense the same? They need huge upgrades, guys, everywhere, especially with receivers, because there are just absolutely no targets. And I think you got to bring in a quarterback to develop. I think ideally the guy you'd want to bring in or bring back is Garoppolo, But I don't know if Shanahan or John Lynch is going to trade him from San Francisco. So he would, to me, be the sort of ideal guy that you would want to look at. Now, like I mentioned earlier with Andy Dalton, would New England bring him in, for example, as a sort of placeholder and draft a quarterback and develop him? So I would guess that's an option. But I definitely think they have to draft one. And for Bill, you know, people knock him and all this, but I'll tell you, they were in a lot of these games this year with really, I think, a pretty lousy roster, to be honest with you. Let's not forget Hightower and, you know, what was it, Chung and some of those other guys. They opted out of the season. So they were already shorthanded. And then you magnify the injuries. But you look at it, I mean, the game against Seattle, they had that sucker won. If Cam doesn't fumble in the late stages in Buffalo, there's a chance they win that game. So, you know, a couple of breaks here and there. I thought the Patriots were largely competitive, you know, for the season. So does Belichick have that hunger and desire to keep going? I guess that remains to be seen. Or are they going to groom McDaniels to be Belichick's successor? I guess that's only going to be determined over time, too. And they really need to start hitting with that draft. Because as good as Belichick is with the X's and O's, sometimes his player evaluations aren't that hot, Bob. So I would definitely look at, you know, the Patriots here. And they're in definite transition. Still think they've got a window to be competitive, but it's clear, especially on the offensive side of the ball, they need some massive upgrades with some great playmakers and start spending some money, you know, or else they may be wallowing towards mediocrity here.
Jake, I have many friends in this area who are New York Jets fans, and they surely didn't wait too long to get their new coach, Robert Saleh. And, you know, he's a defensive guy. Now they're going in a 360 from a guy like Adam Gase. Jake, and, you know, we know that they were historically bad this past season, and they just need so much to happen here. But what do you think about the coaching choice, a defensive kind of guy, and where do they go from here?
Great question. Saleh, you know, obviously comes across as this energetic sort, you know, a really good defensive mind, because I thought even, you know, during this year, San Francisco played pretty hard on that side of the ball, even with all the injuries. I mean, you talk about a team just besieged by him. You know, the 49ers just had so many, which is why that was part and parcel why they couldn't retain their NFC championship. So he's also a first-time guy, too. So I think there's sort of that intrigue. You know, maybe he's not all that much older than some of his players. You know, the Jets have some major decisions. I guess, what now? Woody Johnson is coming back from England, so he's going to own the team once again. They got some decisions they need to make. And I guess the biggest one, obviously, is Sam Darnold. I mean, here's a guy they drafted third overall, and some would say, well, maybe he's just not going to be the franchise guy. There were instances this year where I saw some, you know, bright spots out of him, but there are also some instances where, you know, you could tell that he was frustrated. You could tell that obviously not having enough playmakers maybe was starting to get to him a little bit. So they really have to decide. Even Saleh talked about it in his opening press conference today. That's a discussion in terms of with Joe Douglas, the GM of the team, whether they want to keep Sam Darnold or do you, you know, somehow use him as a package. I know there's some rumors floating around that, you know, they're supposedly on the Deshaun Watson bandwagon in Houston. Well, if you're going to start making trades like that, you would have to start at the absolute minimum with Darnold and the number two overall pick and then other considerations just to even get Houston to go to the table on that one. So to me, guys, the big thing with the Jets and also an upgrade on, you know, their offensive personnel too, because the Bell signing didn't work out for them, you know, and Robbie Anderson left, had a productive year in Charlotte, so their receivers aren't very good. But you got to decide, where am I going with this quarterback? Is it Darnold, who we drafted third overall, or do we wipe the slate clean with him? And, you know, if Jacksonville doesn't take Trevor Lawrence, do they go then with Fields from Ohio State? You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So the Jets have a big-time decision with what they're going to do. And, again, that all comes back to the quarterback.
Vic, before we let you go, we got to get your picks for the conference championship games this weekend. Who do you like and why?
Oh, boy. Gosh, I'd love to see the Bills get in because, you know, being from that area, obviously it's been over a quarter century since, you know, they've really been this relevant. But, man, if Mahomes is going to play and Kansas City beat him the first time, and they're just so tough to beat at Arrowhead Stadium. So I probably have a slight lean on the Chiefs, probably by, you know, 4 to 7 points. And the other game, wow, wouldn't that be something if Tom Brady is able to pull this off in Lambeau? But, you know, you got to think Green Bay's got revenge on their mind from that blowout that they had against the Bucks. First time Rodgers is at home in the NFC Championship game. Green Bay, arguably the best team in the NFC all year long. So let's have a rematch of Super Bowl I, huh? The Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers.
Zig, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can hear you on SiriusXM and then follow you on social media as well.
Appreciate it, Chris and Bob. At Zig Fracassi, ZigFracassi, and also see my rambling on my Boston Bruins tweets, too. So I do love hockey as well. Let's see, this weekend I'll be on Saturday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern with former Patriot quarterbacks there, Bob. But Matt Cassel has been a regular co-host of mine throughout the season. So Matt and I will break down the conference championships. And then Sunday, after the Bills and the Chiefs, after the Westwood One coverage, former Tennessee Titan, Houston Oiler great Brad Hopkins joins me for NFL Rewind. So 1 a.m. Eastern, we'll analyze both championship games and also look ahead to Super Bowl number 55. So 5 to 8 Eastern Saturday after the Bills-Chiefs Sunday to 1 a.m. Eastern time.
Zig, you're fantastic, my friend. We can't thank you enough for being patient with us tonight and coming back and be a part of the show. We always have a great time when you join us.
Well, Chris and Bob, like I've said throughout the years, it's been an honor to be among the guests and also a really special honor to be in the Hall of Fame that you have. And also, like I said before, and I'll say it again, keep the names of the yesteryear greats that maybe weren't the biggest names in the NFL. The fact that you guys have them on and keep them relevant in some of their stories, absolutely job well done on your part, too.
We can't thank you enough for that. Zig, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Talk soon, Zig.
All right, Chris. All right, Bob. Thank you.
Take care now.
See you, Zig.
Bye.
That's the great Zig Fracassi. Again, like you said, on Twitter, at Zig Fracassi, ZigFracassi. That's how you can keep up to date with all the great things he's doing. We've got our next guest, Bo Bach, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Bo right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Take it away, guys.
The door is locked. There's no way out.
All right, now back with us is the Dean of Atlanta Sports Talk Radio and a member of our 2017 Guest Hall of Fame class, Mr. Bo Bach. Bo's been a great guest going all the way back to his first visit with us in September of 2013. Tonight's his 15th time being a part of the show, and he's absolutely one of our favorite guests. He has been the Dean of Atlanta Sports Talk Radio since 1973, and nobody knows Atlanta sports better than Bo does. His insights are now second to none in this town, and we are excited to have the Hall of Famer, Bo Bach, back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Bo, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hey, Bo.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Bobby. How are you? I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Bo. Bo, how have you been dealing with all this crazy COVID-19 stuff over the last year plus?
You know what? I think about it all the time. I haven't been dealing with it. I'm in a coma. You know, I can't get a handle on anything. It's just like Groundhog Day over and over and over again. It's been brutal. I mean, if you would try to explain what we've all gone through, I don't think anybody really can. It's inexplicable. And then this week, I got COVID. So
you did?
I'm just coming off it now.
Wow. What was your experience like? Was it just the taste and smell thing? Did you get a bad case? How did you deal?
It just takes you out. It just leaves you listless, no energy, not wanting to do anything, just wears you out.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're coming out the other side. God bless you, my friend.
I know. Jeez, my goodness.
Well, I got to get your thoughts on the Falcons. And this is an organization that, you know, ever since the Super Bowl collapsed 5 years ago, it's unbelievable, but 5 years ago now, the team seems to have gotten worse and worse every season. They get a new head coach now in Arthur Smith, former Titans offensive coordinator. Got Terry Fontenot as a new GM coming over from the Saints. Your thoughts on where the Falcons go from here?
I'm excited about this, and because the Falcons have been hapless. Arthur may be the worst owner in the history of the NFL. He's ignorant. He's arrogant. He doesn't care. It's almost as if he's kidnapped his team and taken them off the picture. Nothing. He reacts to nothing. So this is kind of like a toy for the zillionaire. It's very, very frustrating. Very frustrating. However, now, Arthur Smith, I'm coming to hear him a little bit. I'm coming to listen to him. I like the guy. It's not somebody that I would ever say Arthur would hire him because he's totally unlike Arthur and Arthur's type of people. You know, for instance, Dan Quinn was a child. Mike Smith, before him, was just incapable, just had no energy whatsoever. No inclination. Before that, Bobby Petrino. Before that, Jim Mora. So Arthur's not good at human nature and choosing people to work with. However, I'm kind of liking what I'm hearing from Arthur Smith. I like, and then with Terry Fontenot in the front office, that's a quinella that you can win with, I think. Without knowing anything about Arthur Smith except what I've just heard. How I relate to him, but with Terry Fontenot upstairs, there's going to be some rhyme or reason to everything we do, as opposed to just catch as catch can.
But I want to get your thoughts on the upcoming draft, because some of the mock drafts I'm seeing have the Falcons taking BYU quarterback Zach Wilson with the number 4 pick, and I'm not sure that's what the Falcons need. I mean, I don't think Matt Ryan's the problem, and to me, it's the defense. They allowed nearly 26 a game. They were dead last against the pass. Your thoughts, I mean, where do you think Falcons need to go in the draft?
Well, more than anything, we need a pass rusher. More than anything, and that's been for a long time now. But we get no pressure on the quarterback, and consequently, the secondary breaks down. It's tough to figure where we're going to go with Terry Fontenot coming in. Not knowing him, not knowing his tendencies, not having spoken with him, we could go anywhere in this draft, but I hope it's not quarterback because Matt deserves the opportunity to win with an organization that's put together correctly. Matt's been the fall guy for these guys for his entire career. You talk about a warrior. You talk about a guy who's there every day. You talk about a leader. You're talking about an emotional guy who cares and is one of the most accurate quarterbacks ever to come down the pike. He deserves a chance to have an offensive coordinator, a general manager, and a coach who has a sense for what he wants to accomplish.
Well, I want to get your thoughts on the University of Georgia as well. The Bulldogs continue to be a team that can't get over the hump. I mean, you know, since Kirby took over in 2016 and the run at the national championship in 2017. I mean, obviously expectations are high every year, particularly, you know, here in the state. But if you go back all the way back to 1980, Bo, I mean, the last time Georgia won a national championship, I mean, they're averaging 3 losses a season. Is Kirby the guy? I don't know.
But Chris, that was Vince Dooley. Vince Dooley, you know, the difference between Georgia and Alabama is Vince Dooley and Bear Bryant. That's the whole thing. You know, and her, you know, that championship 1980 was won by Herschel Walker. I have never seen a player have more impact on a program than has Herschel Walker. I mean, it was phenomenal. I was there every day. Saw the whole thing. It was phenomenal, the impact he had. And as far as Kirby's concerned, you know, don't forget, yeah, you know, he's not here. He's coming out of a hole. And, you know, Georgia is not a big reputation for quarterbacks that thrown down the field all the time. All right, he got caught up in his quarterbacks a little bit. Got, you know, one too many. Got Fields, had to go to Ohio State. And the other kid went up to Oregon. But I love Kirby. See, because of all those years we wasted with Vince Dooley, Kirby's going. Georgia is one of those teams that should go for it every year. And Kirby is going for it. There's nothing about, you know, padding his stats and wanting to protect his job. No, Kirby's a competitor, man. He's going for it, and Georgia's primed.
Bob, questions for Bo?
Bo, it's always a pleasure, and we hope you continue to feel better. And I want to go back to Matt Ryan a little bit. I mean, to me, Bo, I think we're on the same page. It would be a shame to see this guy go to any other franchise at his age. He'll be 36 in the spring, yeah. And I'd like to see him and Julio Jones, you know, give it one more good shot, yeah, you know, with the new coach and with the whole regime changed and everything. Right. But how long? I mean, is he one of those guys that's going to stick around till he's 40? I mean, does he have a couple years left? What do you see for his very near future?
Yeah, I think, Bobby, I think he's got at least a couple of years left. This year was kind of different for him in that he looks stale. And you know why he looks stale? Because I think he was stale. This organization will wear everybody out. Just the people they brought in, it's just horrible. And Matt, like Chris said, hopefully we get a couple of years out of him. And he can get some satisfaction in this town and then maybe go someplace on a, you know, whirlwind tour and win for somebody else like Brady. Hopefully. But he can still play. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, Matt will give you what you give him. He's a competitor. This guy's a fiery, competitive guy.
And, Bo, I wanted to switch over to just baseball for a minute because obviously in the shortened season, the Braves did fine last year. I mean, they could score runs. What do you expect this coming year, provided that they play 162 games or close to it? I mean, is there excitement down there even with the lack without the lack of fans?
You know, no. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, the excitement would be there if it wasn't for this corona thing, which is put us all in a coma.
Right.
But, you know, when you say, is there excitement? No, you don't feel it day to day. It's kind of like Arthur taking the Falcons away. You don't see them around town. They're not top of mind. And the same thing with the Braves, but it's because of this COVID thing. I think Braves are the team to beat. I hate the fact that we're going to lose Ozuna, you know, because, you know, you talk about a DH. This guy set everything up. So hopefully we can re-sign him. And it's certainly if we go to DH and looking like it's not going to be this year, but, you know, he was great. He set us up.
But, Bo, to that point, right, you talk about the Braves being the team to beat. This is a team that just it seems like perennially can't get over the hump. I mean, up 3-1 against the Dodgers and the NLCS last year, and then they collapse and lose that, you know, outside of the 1 year back in the 90s. This is a team that perennially gets to the playoffs and even to an NLCS and can't seem to get it done. What is it about the Braves franchise keeps them from being, you know, multiple time World Series champions?
It's not an energetic franchise. It's not a franchise that motivates a player. This is a franchise that's fallen asleep on itself and can't maximize its popularity. They don't know what the heck they're doing. However, from a baseball side, from Paul Snyder and Roy Clark and those guys who put that 1990s team together, this team has had personnel. So, by the way, Snick is great. And that championship we won in 95, that was a law of averages championship. You know, when you're there so many times. Seriously. I mean, we didn't do anything to say, hey, we're overdue. No, that was a law of averages. So I just think that we are formidable, and Freddie's back. I love Dansby. You know, you think about it's it's going to be a fun year if we ever can catch up. You know what I mean? Catch up mentally.
Yeah.
I'd like to be able to put what's going on right now in perspective, but I can't. It's kind of like no reference point.
To your point about energy, Bo, I think that's just sort of one of the things about the city of Atlanta. I mean, the sports teams in Atlanta just seem to lack energy. I mean, I think that the, especially from a baseball side, it just seemed like, you know, in the mid 90s, you know, apathy set in, right? I mean, the Braves were going to win the division. Of course they were. The Braves are going to win, you know, in the divisional round. Of course they are. And, you know, fans would, you know, start to come a little bit later. Well, I'm not going to go to the division series. They're going to win that. I'll go when they get to the NLCS. And then I'll go when they get to the World Series. And it just seems like the energy is just lacking in this town. It's just not a great sports town, in my opinion. What are your thoughts?
And you know why? I mean, that's been my thoughts for years. The reason is we have no sports media. There is zero sports media here. There's only one guy in the market who'll offer an opinion, and that's me. And they're trying to blackball me. You know what I mean? I'm drowning over here because I've got an opinion. But it's really refrained upon here. People don't take kindly to it for whatever reason. I guess it's not sounding like Southern hospitality or some crazy stuff like that. But there's no energy coming from the media or the town or the fans because there's nobody writing about it. There's nobody pumping them up on radio or TV. The entire sports media spectrum, unprofessional here. Nobody prompting anybody. Hey, you know, Braveswood had those great teams that we were talking about at the end of the year. They would go away. They lost the final game. Nothing in the paper, nothing about recapping, nothing about what are we going to do next year. The same thing with the Falcons. Arthur Blank can put this terrible product out there and not pay for it. Not have to absorb any criticism whatsoever. You know, and billionaires, I'm coming to find out, they don't care about anything. You know what I mean? I probably wouldn't either. However, he's got a responsibility to this town, to this market, to these fans. When you take over a team like that, you're expected to do something. You'll not sit on your hands. And that's what Arthur's done. He's been a terrible, terrible owner.
Bob, one more for Bo before we let him go.
I might as well throw the Atlanta Hawks at you, too. I mean, there's another team. They're a 500 team. It seems like they're always stuck in neutral. I mean, I like watching Trae Young once in a while, but in the East, they're just always going to be like an average team. Are they just interested in putting a team out there?
You know, for years and years, that's true. But under this new regime, there is a desire to win. Under Schlenk, who put together the Warriors, this guy's got a rhyme and reason. I think you're going to see some Hawks changes very, very soon because this team is not coming together the way it's supposed to. You've also got a problem with John Collins in that he's got a big mouth and he's taken away from Trey's game because he's criticized Trey. Now, you know, those are the two babes, the boys. Now all of a sudden you have that inside. It's a disease. It's a cancer, which we certainly have not needed after all these years. So I think Schlenk will take care of that very, very quickly.
Bo, before we let you go, remind our listeners how they can watch you, because you're out there on Facebook Live and still out there putting together podcasts and your own show. Talk about how they can find that, watch it, and then follow you on social media as well.
Well, they can find it on Facebook or on Twitter. And, you know, I'm still trying to learn all about this podcast business so we can be all over the place. But, you know, and the other thing is if you send me your email address, I'll put you on my commentary, which goes out every morning at 7 a.m. And you'll know everything about Atlanta sports. So that's it. I'd like to have an address like Santa Claus or something, you know. But unfortunately, you have to find the guy.
Bo, tell them how they can get their email address to you. Tell them what email address they need to send that to.
Yeah, send it to Bobock, BEAUBOCK, at gmail.com.
There you go. Bo, thank you so much for coming back and being a part of the show. Always a fun segment when you're on. We can't thank you enough for being generous with your time tonight. And over the years, you're absolutely one of our favorites.
Stay well, Bo, please.
I appreciate you asking me. I thought you forgot about me.
I never.
Aged a lot in the last couple of years because I thought you guys forgot about
me. Not the Hall of Famer. Not Bo Bock. Absolutely
I'll
not.
Be good.
Take care, Bo. Feel better, my friend.
Take care, Bo.
See ya, Bo.
You.
That's the great Bo Bock. You know, I tell you what, Bob. You know, a guy like Bo, who's been, like I say, the dean of Atlanta Sports Talk Radio since the early 70s. I mean, he's got the pulse on it, and I think he's right. I think there's something's got to change in the city of Atlanta. I mean, every once in a while, the city will perk up about sports. Certainly, you know, when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl 5 years ago, there was a little bit about that, but then depression hit, you know, when they blew that lead. But and then there's apathy with the Braves. I mean, something's got to pump up this town, and you know, I think Bo Bock's commentary is the thing that's got to do it.
Yeah, and again, we prefaced this show saying that Bo will tell you. I mean, he's very critical about a lot of stuff, and it's all true. I mean, again, I brought up the fact that, you know, up here in New England, we just don't hear too much about, like, the Atlanta Hawks, Chris, or anything about, like, a team like that. It's like, do they still have a franchise down there? And you look at the standings, and the Hawks are, like, you know, a 500 team. It's like, wow, you know, just there's, you just don't hear much. And like he said, that might have something to do with the media down there or the lack of. And, but, you know, he's got a refreshing approach and you could see the disgust in his voice, but he's on top of everything. And again, one of our dearest friends, we just hope he feels better very soon.
Yes, absolutely. And, folks, again, bobock@gmail.com and give him a follow on Twitter at @BoBockSports. All right, when Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our spotlight on the positive. Hear two more stories about guys out there doing great things in their community. We'll do that right on the other side of this real quick station break.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, we are back here on Thursday Night Tailgating. We're firing up our spotlight on the positive. Bob, who are you putting your spotlight on this week?
Well, it's no secret, Chris. This guy has been mentioned on the show before, and anyone who follows football on a regular basis knows what good a guy that Russell Wilson is, the quarterback of the Seahawks. And we know what he's done on the field, Chris. You know, this past year that just finished has more wins in the first 9 seasons than any quarterback in history. And of course, he's been to a bunch of Pro Bowls already, and has over 20 franchise records already. And he's not that old of a man. And he's already won the Steve Largent Award. Now, Steve Largent, you remember, you know, Hall of Fame receiver. But that award is for the player who best exemplifies the spirit and dedication, integrity, things like that. So Russell is no stranger to doing great things, Chris. And of course, now he's up for the NFL Man of the Year or the Seahawks candidate. And, you know, you read through his bio, and these are all on the NFL website. You just Google NFL Man of the Year, and you'll get all 30 guys who were up for the award. And as I say every week, Chris, you read about every one of these guys, and you say, how can't he win this year? Well, I mean, I'm reading Wilson's this week, and I'm saying to myself, you know, I say that every week, but this guy's got to be one of the favorites because of what he does and what he's done since he came in the league. And let me just go through a couple things because the bio is totally crazy. You know, why he's up for it this year is because how fast he responded to COVID-19, him and his wife, Chris. And he, as soon as it hit, him and his wife, they really wanted to focus on the children and families who were losing access to food because of people actually losing jobs or schools closing down. And so him and his wife, Sierra, right away, Chris, they made a personal donation of 1 million meals. That's a lot of food. 1 million meals to the organization Feeding America. And from there, he teamed up with a company called Wheels Up, and which created something called Meals Up, which that actually, to this day now, they're at about 50 million meals for Feeding America. And that's pretty much the reason why he's a candidate this year. You know, he has his already has his Why Not You Foundation, short WNYF, they call it, the Russell Wilson WNYF Foundation. Now, this thing, for years now, he's been involved in food deliveries and things like that. And because of the excellence he's had at it, it's like the poster place for delivering food now. The Seattle area is all because of Wilson. Other major cities are doing it because of what he has done. And other things that he's done constantly since he came in the league, Chris, every week he visits on a Tuesday patients, small kids at the Seattle Children's Hospital. He has not missed any since I can remember. He continues just to do that. I think he's seen over 600-700 pediatric patients already, Chris, which is incredible. So think about it. 600-700 pediatric kids, how many lives he's changed just from showing up when they were sick. You know, it's just amazing. His organization has raised over $100 million, giving all kinds of things. He's very big on getting people out to vote. He likes to get kids at a young age doing the right thing. And again, he's been with the team 9 years. No player has done more good in the community for the Seahawks, not even close, than Russell Wilson. So what he's doing off the field, again, we always say this, it trumps everything that he's doing on the field. So big shout out to Russell Wilson. There's not many guys more positive and deserving of the award, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. I tell you what, the things that he has done and continues to do are really amazing. So kudos to you for bringing that story back up, and to Russell Wilson and his wife. Bob, I'm going to jump sports this week over to hockey and put my spotlight on New Jersey Devils defenseman PK Subban. Going back to 2014, he started the PK's Helping Hand Foundation to provide financial support to families with children suffering from various illnesses. In September of 2015, he donated $10 million to Montreal's Children's Hospital, which was the largest single donation by any athlete to one single organization, and the biggest philanthropic commitment by a sports figure in Canadian history. And now, even though he's been traded twice since being with the Canadiens, every time he goes back to Montreal for a game, he brings his teammates to the hospital to visit with the kids. When he played for the Predators, he established a charity called Blue Line Buddies, where he gave a ticket to local policemen and women and had them bring an underprivileged kid to the game as their buddy for the game. And PK would pay for them to have dinner at one of the premium restaurants at the arena, and then he met with them before and after the game. He put that together to develop relationships between local law enforcement and kids there in Nashville. Giving back is also something that's been instilled with him, you know, going back to his family. His mother taught the family to look out for each other and take care of the, you know, less well off. His father took a job in less privileged school districts so he could make a difference in those kids' lives. And this his foundation is a family affair. It's run by PK, his parents, and his two brothers and two sisters. So I wanted to bring that out. Kudos to New Jersey defenseman PK Subban for all that he is doing to make a difference in the cities where he's played. And that's in Montreal, Nashville, and now there in New Jersey. He's a guy who really cares, Bob, and he's showing it through his time and through his own money and then money he is raising through his foundation. I thought that was fantastic. $10 million, Bob.
I was just going to bring that up, Chris. That floored me. You know, I'm trying to compare a donation like that to what he's making. I mean, that's got to be one of the most generous things I've ever heard. You know, they're not making the kind of money that some of these NFL players are and everything. But you could see with him, it's all about giving back. It's not about a number or a percentage. But, wow, thanks for bringing that up. And that just shows you, you know, it's not just that these guys have money. He's given a lot of it away, and that's why we saved this segment for the end, man. That really hit home with me.
All right, it is time for us to put a bow on this episode of Thursday Night Tailgate. Our sincere thanks again to Greg Lloyd, Tony Collins, Zig Fricassi, and Bo Bach for joining us. And as always, Bob, thank you so much for sharing your Thursday nights with me, my friend.
Well, Chris, I mean, four TNT Hall of Famers, you know, that's a home run anytime we can speak with guys like that. But they're, again, those guys are great, whatever they do in the sports world, but they're just as good friends. And that's why years later,
yes,
they're still coming on whenever we call them. So thanks for putting it together, and we'll do it again next week.
Yeah, next week scheduled to join us are former Bills and Packers wide receiver and Aurora College head coach and TNT guest Hall of Famer Don Beebe. Making his TNT debut with us is going to be former Cardinals and Giants running back Otis O.J. Anderson. Really looking forward to having O.J. as part of the show. And Steelers legend Rocky Blyer is going to be back with us. And folks, if you haven't seen Rocky's one-man play about his life, go online to BroadwayOnDemand.com and watch it. It really is spectacular. And as we said over the years, Rocky is probably the best storyteller we've ever heard. And then, of course, Tony Collins will be back with us for our five-star picks of the week. So it's going to be a really fun night. We certainly hope you're going to come back and be a part of the show with us. Please follow us on social media. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzari, and the show is at TNT Podcast. Please visit us on Facebook as well. Both Bob and I have our own Facebook pages. Plus, we have a page for the show as well. You can interact with us there. Please give us a like. That's very important to us. Please check out our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, to see what our guest schedule looks like. Plus, we link back to our page over on Podbean so you can stream or download any of our archive episode or segments right there online. Plus, you can download the Podbean app and take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile phone. Plus, you can also find the show available on Apple Podcasts, Radio.com, TuneIn, and Player.fm. We are all over the internet. And folks, please do us a favor and go online to podcastmagazine.com and vote for the show and their Hot 50 list and get us right up there on their charts. We really appreciate your support. You can vote for three podcasts while you're on there, and we'd certainly appreciate your vote for our golf show next on the tee as well. Several of our friends have great podcasts that would really appreciate your support. Outstanding shows like Huddle Up with Gus with our good friend Gus Frerotte, Talking Golf Getaways with our good friend Mitch Lawrence, Asylum Football with our friends Flieger and Briggs, The Third and Three podcast with our good friend Jason Fearman, and then Locked On Patriots with Mike Diabetti. So please, folks, go online, support those podcasts as well. Bob, take us home, my friend.
Okay, Chris, you stay healthy and enjoy the games this weekend. And we also want to thank our terrific announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the great job he always does with our intro and ads. We also want to shout out to Kyle Turley and the Kyle Turley Band for the upcoming outro music. And on behalf of myself and Chris, we want to thank everyone out there tonight for listening. We appreciate you the most. And until next week, good night, Kevin, good night, Terry, and good night, Rusty. We miss you guys.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day.